Okay.
That was a great time. I haven't talked to you since last decade.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, what's going on?
Well, we're making improvements to the station at W5WZ, starting to have a few more multi-op things down here, not for the big contest, but we're doing sweepstakes sideband. I've been in the top two or three in the country the last three iterations. Doing some NAQP sidebands, top three or four finished the last five iterations. And we did CQWW-CW this go-round. Made about 1,400 QSOs with a small team of three people. So, just improving and doing what you prompted me to do roughly 9 years ago.
No, that's good. That's good. So you want to do some in-band stuff.
That's right. We've used the relay, push-to-talk foot switch relay lockout for two radios and sweepstakes. Been very successful with that. And, been really considering how much benefit an in-band would do, even in the NAQP, how much good an in-band would do to go hit the other guys that are calling CQ that are the serious competitors. And, we tried it a little bit back in sweepstakes, and the in-band QRM was making it impossible to do. So since you and I set this call up, I've acquired an EA4TX interlock box. So I've got the interlock that will handle, sufficient number of radios and things. And just figuring out the filtering for the in-band is where I'm kind of running into a stump, a roadblock.
Well, there are two things you need. There are a couple of things you need for successful in-band. You need isolation between the antennas. My most success is with very big separation on the order of 1,000 feet or more, and second station listening on vertical arrays, such as four squares, not active four squares, but full size Comtech like four squares. You get about 25 to 30 dB of polarization isolation when you're using a horizontal antenna on the main station and verticals on the second.
Right, I remember you at one year at CTU saying your aha moment was at a field day running a dipole on 80 or 160 with a wire vertical in close proximity, and that's when the theoretical 20 dB kind of struck you. I remember you sharing that with us probably back in 2006 or 2007.
Right. The other thing is absolutely paramount is you have to have radios that have sufficient dynamic range and roofing and close-in roofing filters. You can't do this with a TS-590 or an ITOM 7300 or even a 7610. It's got to be a K3 level, both radios, or the ICOM 7800, 7700 is pretty good. 7851 is the best in-band radio I've ever used. We get tremendous isolation with that radio.
Yeah, I'm running a pair of K3s and a pair of Yaesu 1000 mic poppers. All of them have the good filtering in them.
Yeah, the 1000 MPs won't do it.
Okay.
K3's got a shot. But the MPs, their transmitters are dirty. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that receiver is not designed to handle that kind of a signal level close in. So those are the things. And then there's, the grounding and bonding that you do in the shack really is very important. polarization and doing all the grounding and bonding correctly, and then using very high quality transmitters and receivers. It's in fact, I think the improved synthesizer in the T3S would even that would be worth it for in-band work as well.
Okay. Like anything else, how much can you afford to do, right?
It's, you know, and it takes very long. We didn't get there overnight. It took years to get this mostly right. And I continue to improve on it. You know, I get the amplifiers tuned more correctly. Everything matters when you're trying to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got ferrite everywhere. I mean, just on every cable is a ferrite choke. It's just, so, you know, in a nutshell, there's not a predictable cookbook because every station is different, but those are the things that are important and that I've used to get in-band to work pretty well.
Okay. But, you know, I've done a pretty decent job of properly bonding everything in the shack to the electrical system, to the single point entry panel, to the tower, to the radial system. I took a lot of care when I built all that stuff to do that. In fact, I just installed a new desk, and first thing I did after I did that was, you know, copper bonding strap on the back of it tied into the whole ground system. And, Tom and Pete up at KDAZ have taught me to use a Scotch-Brite and the SS-30 compound between all those connections.
Yes.
But as far as anything that stands out to me, Tim, that's obvious in the station, I don't have and never have had, you know, the RF issues that I hear some hams talk about, but I don't know that any of the things that are happening, because I don't have a way to measure it, I'm not really smart enough to do the measuring, are the result of not having ferrite beads. I don't have very many cables at all that have ferrite on them. I mean, everything seems quiet to me.
Well, it is quiet until you start trying to deal with the in-band stuff, and then everything that hooks to your radio or amplifier or anything else, every cable is an antenna. And you have to, everything has to be dead cold to improve the chances that you can deal with all that in-band energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, what worked for just having one radio on a band, that doesn't prove anything when you're trying to do the in-band stuff.
That makes sense.
So, and it has to be holistic. You can't just say, well, I'm going to put ferrite on the AC power cable and I'm not going to put it on the relay line to the amplifier. I mean, the relay line to the amplifier and K3LR on both sides has a number 31 ferrite core. All the AC cables have them. There are chokes on the antenna end and the shack end of all coax cables. Hard line is better than coax. My entire station is wired with RG400, which is a double-shielded cable. Entire station has got silver-plated connectors. I mean, all these things matter.
Yeah.
They all matter.
Yeah. I get it. I'm hardline to the base of the tower, to the stack matches, and LMR 400 up, silver connectors everywhere, but there's no ferrites on any of my cables, other than one or two power supplies.
Yeah, you need chokes. You need chokes on all those coax lines, all those feed lines. You need good bead chokes, because the outside shield of all that coax is an antenna.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
like where the I've got bead balance, you know, on my Yagis. So the feed line comes down the tower to a stack match box and goes in to port A, and then goes out, you know, back to the shack. Do I need ferrites on both sides of the stack matches, on every cable inbound and outbound?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I've got.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're using 31 material?
Yeah, I like 31 material the best.
Okay. All right, and some of them are the beads you slip on before you put the connector on the coax, and I guess on some of your relays and stuff, it's a bigger toroid, and you wrap the cable through it?
That's right.
Okay.
Yep, it all can be an antenna and re-radiate and cause trouble. I mean, you're dealing with a huge amount of energy very close, and the only way to have a prayer is to make sure that everything is cold.
Okay. Well, it seems like I remember seeing or reading somewhere, and I've not been able to find it again, that some of the WRTC competitors at some point in time have had some really sharp filtering that they use for segments of the band, for like, you know, 40 meters from 7 to 7.15 and 7.15 to 7.30. Am I remembering that correctly? Is that something that those guys do?
There were a couple of guys that had some crystal filters, but I used to use crystal filters too, but it got to the point where the crystal filters weren't giving me enough.
Okay.
So that wasn't a panacea either.
Okay, okay.
So, like I said, nothing substitutes doing the right engineering up front.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's quite different from the average ham saying put a G5RV up at 50 feet and work the world, and that's all you ever need. We're in a different
right.
We're in a different world from that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Those are the things that do you ever want Silver's grounding and bonding book?
I don't.
No, you need that.
Okay.
$15 or $20, it's really good.
Okay. Now, I do have George Cuts of George's second edition and first edition Managing Interstation Interference.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good book as well, but you need to read Ward's book. He really did a good job, and there's a lot of stuff in there on getting the station design correct.
Okay.
I think you'll like it.
Yeah, Ward contested sweepstakes with us about 4 years ago down at KN50. Had a great time with him down there.
Yep. So, he's a really good guy.
He is. I like him. Sure is. Well, wonderful. Wonderful. Isolation, polarization, grounding, high-quality transceivers. I don't see many of the 7850s popping up for sale on the used market.
7851s?
Yeah, 51s, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't looked lately. Every once in a while, one will come up for sale, but that radio took it to a new level of our in-band capability when we went to all 7851s. Of course, KDZ is all 7851s now.
Oh, I know. I was up there the first CQWW after he got them.
Yeah.
And sat down there that Friday about lunch with the 400-page thick manual starting to read. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good deal.
Well, there you go. You got a list of things you can do, and I think as you go along, you'll see some improvements.
All right, Tim. Well, I appreciate it. You've always been very helpful to helping me, the little guy, get moving and doing some things. And You know, I'm starting to see my kids are older. I've only got one left in high school. She'll graduate in 2021. And I'm actually starting to see my time open back up a little and my bank account get a little larger finally after all these years.
There you go. Well, good luck to you, and if I can help you in any way, just give me a holler.
I'll do it. I hope to see you in Dayton this year. It's a non-graduation year, so I may be able to make it.
All right, well, I'll look forward to that, Scott.
Tim, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it very much.
All right, take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.